I think that has now been accomplished, so you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Tom White. I represent the plaintiff below, the appellant here. This case presents some very serious issues on the integrity of the law governing the sale of goods in the state of Nebraska. Mr. McCoolidge is a partial owner of a dealership very experienced in handling transactions with automobiles. He found himself diagnosed with MS. He was looking for an automobile he could convert to take care of a wheelchair. He found one on the internet, thought that he would make a bid on it, was unsuccessful. He was then contacted by an agent for Cars and Truck, Inc., and said, we can arrange a private sale of this vehicle. As very important, Mr. McCoolidge went out of his way to confirm he was dealing with a licensed bonded dealer. The reason for that is that if you get a vehicle, especially when you're buying one over the internet through cross state lines, and there's a problem in the title, you can go back to the dealer and take refuge in the fact that they have a bond and that you know you're buying good title. Mr. McCoolidge got the car delivered, started working on it. Paperwork was kept promising. He started doing repairs. Ultimately, they never delivered any title. First, they said, you have to go to the Department of Motor Vehicles and get a bonded title. And that means you get to register it, but there's no real proof of ownership. Mr. McCoolidge pointed out that the signed over document that they offered was from a stranger to the transaction he had never talked to. He never transferred any money to. He didn't know him at all. And the statute was never complied with. The statutes in Nebraska are very clear what it takes to move good title. Inexplicably, the district court found that if the DMV will register a vehicle, that equates to good title.
Was that in 2011?
The trial.
When the trial court stated that Coolidge could have registered this certificate title
right.
in 2011.
They found that he could register it, and the trial court called that good title.
Is that a question of law or question of fact?
Question of law, Your Honor. Statutes are clear. If you look at the statutes quoted in our brief, you cannot transfer title in the state of Nebraska without a number of items, among which is a bill of sale. And the frustrating part about this, not only did Mr. McCoolidge get a vehicle without good title, he can't resell it because he doesn't know whether he owns it.
But the trial court did find that the defendant breached the contract, did they not?
I think they found that once he delivered good title, they found no damages. And that's what's really the concern here, Your Honor, is not only does Mr. McCoolidge being told, you have to accept a vehicle with a defective title. You can't even store it under the UCC and recover that cost. He can't resell it.
There seem to be a lot of titles here. What is your concern, or what is the defect in your opinion as to the one that the court said was good title and you should have registered it?
It was signed by a person Mr. McCoolidge never heard of. He never dealt with. It should have been, and this is the frustrating part, the defendant below, the appellee here, always had perfect ability to cure. All he had to do was have the person they claim was the title sell it to them into the dealership, pay the appropriate taxes in the state of Tennessee, and then issue a bill of sale and a title to Mr. McCoolidge from Cars and Trucks, which is all he had to do. Then they are in the chain of title. We're in compliance with state statute. We're in compliance with Tennessee tax law. And they wouldn't do it. And so when you're in that situation, you have every reason to be afraid that there's some profound defect in the ownership of that car when it's so simple to cure and they won't do it. So now Mr. McCoolidge has a vehicle. He has every reason to suspect the title's something's really wrong here. And the court says, well, you can't even store it, which you're ordered to do under the UCC. If you can't sell it, you can't scrap it. His only option, and the court said he had to do it, was accept a defective title and then sue for the difference. But that's not the law.
Is it your position that the title was defective because Mr. McCoolidge didn't recognize a name?
No, ma'am, it's because the person who was signing the title over was a complete stranger to the transaction.
Did the certificate of title contain such assignments as are necessary to show title in the purchaser or not?
No.
What was missing?
Cars and Trucks got the money. Cars and Trucks represented they were selling the vehicle.
Were they ever an owner of the vehicle?
No, and that was the problem. And all they would have had to do was have this person sign the vehicle over to Cars and Trucks. If they wanted to accept that title, that's their business. But now they're standing in the chain of title. They issued the property, the tax documents, so that we can get proper sales tax documents. The notarized bill of sale, which our statute requires. And they're in the chain of title. At that point, Mr. McCoolidge knows that in the chain of title back there, there's a bonded licensed dealer. They wouldn't do it. And when you don't do that in the car industry, not only in violation of statutes, you're setting off red alarms to anybody who's in the dealership business or owns cars. If you won't take title and stand behind it, why should I trust it?
On the damages, did McCoolidge tell the sellers before he bought the car that he had access to a free wheelchair ramp?
Yes. He had multiple conversations with them. Why he was buying it, Your Honor, that he had MS, and he had a number of conversations on that and testified.
So on the period of loss, damages on the use of loss, when did McCoolidge finish repairing the roof?
Well, he had the roof probably, he finally finished repairing it, I'm going to estimate here, about 6 months into it, Your Honor.
Is that in the record?
No, Your Honor.
What do you think the damages are?
Well, I think first damage that we really need to deal with is Mr. McCoolidge is not required to accept a product with defective title. I mean, that's the first proposition of law, and that's what the court ordered. They were ordering him to register it because he could get a bonded title, he could do something, and accept a vehicle without good title. And that is contrary to the law.
So that's,
he has a right
to reject
that.
That's what you want to unwind here?
We offered that, Your Honor. We offered that. But really, the part that's frustrating is the cure was always simple. The cure for the defendants was simply take title in the name
what's
of the...
What's a good outcome here for you?
Well, for Mr. McCoolidge now?
Yes, sir.
At this point? Well, we need to reverse it. We need to vindicate the fact that a person's not required to accept and sue for damages a bad title. That's the precedent of this court. We need to then confirm that a purchaser who acts in a commercially reasonable manner, which is to store the goods because he can't do anything else with them, is entitled to those costs of storage. The court was particularly unfair, I felt, when they said, well, Mr. McCoolidge is trying to change this into a big dollar damage case by storing it. But the reality is he had no other option. The defendant always could have cured this, and we pointed that out to him. All you have to do is put your name on it. I would be happy to answer any questions.
I have one. If he'd received good title, when would McCoolidge... Wouldn't he have finished installing the wheelchair ramp?
Absolutely.
And is there anything in the evidence of when that would have happened? These are all consequential damages, correct?
Yeah, I believe so, yes, Your Honor. No, Your Honor. I mean, what happened is Mr. McCoolidge kept talking to him, thinking that it didn't make any sense for them not to provide the documentation. And, of course, that's the frustrating point is, again, the cure was so simple. Just put it in your name like I bought it from the dealer, which is what I negotiated for. Stand behind the title. And he couldn't get him to do it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Grennan, good morning.
Your Honor.
You may.
It pleases the court opposing counsel. My name is Terry Grennan. I'm counsel for Appalachian Travelers, the bonding company. In this case, the linchpin of this entire case is the standard of review. This court should not reweigh the evidence, and this is a very confusing case. It was the trial lasted a long day. This court cannot act as a fact finder. It has to consider the evidence in the light most favorable to Travelers.
I'm a little confused. Did the court find a breach?
Yes, they did. Okay. There was a breach of contract. But
and you don't cross-appeal that.
No, we did not cross-appeal. trial judge found just that the bond covered this, that there was a breach by the car dealer. But the two key issues in this case are causation and damages. And the trial court found for the defendants against the plaintiff on both of those issues. And on the issue of causation, there's certainly sufficient evidence to support the fact that the plaintiff could have avoided the problem, could have mitigated his damages, and were not the proximate cause of his damages. By his own testimony, he could have titled the car and avoided the problem. And the evidence was also almost overwhelming.
Could have titled the car at what period of time?
That's a little bit confusing. It was sometime, I think, in 2011 or 12. Exhibit 19 and 33 cover that. But the key question is he had the opportunity to do it, and he so admitted.
And your view is that as a matter of law, he could have the pieces of paper and all the rest, he had the right stuff to title the car.
Well, it's not only a matter... Sorry.
Yeah, as a matter of law, you're saying he had the right stuff to title the car.
But also as a matter of fact, he had the opportunity, and the two gentlemen drove all the way up from Tennessee, the owner of the car dealership, to explain everything that he tried to do to get title into Mr. McCoolidge's name. This isn't a case where they just sold this bogus car and then abandoned him. They drove all the way up here and testified, and trial court listened and heard all of the testimony, so there's more than sufficient evidence.
So what is the measure of damages?
Well, there's actually, theoretically...
Well, consequential damages, but what is the main measure of damages?
Well, the main measure of damages would be the... lost the value of the car. There was no evidence as to the value before or after of the car. And then whether you call it incidental or consequential or compensatory damages, the trial court found against the appellant on all of those issues.
That'd be the loss of use and the rental and the wheelchair ramp, is that correct? Loss of the...
Well, those I don't think the wheelchair ramp should be considered because that was not specifically known by the seller. And the trial court found against. They went through each item of damages, whatever you call it, compensatory, consequential, or incidental, and rejected.
And the wheelchair ramp, that's consequential, and the seller would have, or the seller would have had to know.
He had to know specifically, and he also had access to, he could have fixed that. That's something he would have had to have done anyway, regardless, because it was a damaged car, and that was part of the problem of the proof of even compensatory damages. The plaintiff has an awful lot of theories and rules of law, but no hard evidence as to damages, and that's solely within the prerogative of the trial court, the finder of fact, both as to causation and to the amount of damages. And she could consider such things as the fact that we have a car that he bought over the internet and didn't even totally pay for it, and then tries to parlay that into 60-some thousand dollars of damages. She considered the fact that two people drove up from Tennessee to defend their theory of the case. And part of the confusion was due to the fact that he wanted this titled in cars on Keystone. And there is a chain of title, I think it's Exhibits 19 and 33, show what the people in Tennessee tried to do to correct this problem. They just didn't abandon this guy. And that's, again, solely within the prerogative of the trier of fact to decide. There was no storage ever paid.
Mr. White says, as a matter of law, that there was never good title tendered. How do you respond to that?
I think it's probably a mixed question of fact and law. But the key point there is he had the opportunity to get the title corrected. And his testimony was, I'm just waiting to see how this comes out. And so it's not just purely a legal question. It's a question of causation, and it's a question of fact based on all the evidence that the trial court heard. It's not just as simple as Mr. White would have you believe. They've been over backwards, people in Tennessee, to try and get this thing right by this guy. In part, like I said, part of the problem was he wanted it titled in Cars on Keystone, and he was that's who was going to store it. It's a company that he has an interest in. At best, this is a convoluted mess that the trial court heard all of the evidence, looked at numerous exhibits, heard the testimony, and this is a classic case, I submit to you, that it's up to the trier of fact to weigh all of these different factors and make a decision. The trial court had an excellent decision, well-reasoned, a long opinion, listened to all the evidence, and weighed all of these facts. She went through, like I said, each item, the value of the car, the repair costs, storage fee, the issue with the ramp, the rental value. A lot of those things duplicate each other, even if they did prove them, which they did not. The party who goes through the burden expense of a trial, like Travelers did, the ruling should not be overturned unless there's a clear and plain error, and there certainly is not in this case. This is
but
like
Mr. White says there's an error of law in the court's statements.
Well, you're right. If there was an error of law, then I submit to you there was no error of law, particularly on damages. Damages are solely within the amount of damages to be awarded and determined is solely a fact question by the fact finder. So putting everything else aside, that is enough to sustain.
So somewhere along the line, did the court say you can register it? You've got good title.
Excuse me, Your Honor.
I say somewhere along the line, did the trial court say if you can register it, you've got good title?
I don't know that she made a specific ruling on that, but she said he certainly had the opportunity, and based on his admissions, that in fact he had talked to him, and that they would take this as good title.
I'm sorry, who's they?
The Department of Motor Vehicles. It is a little confusing, but again, part of the confusion was caused by the plaintiff himself and how he wanted the title of the car. And again, that is an issue, that fact issue. It goes to causation also, whether these problems were caused by Mr. McCoolidge's actions and the opportunity to get the car registered and titled. But again, that's solely separate from the issue of damages, which the trial court found similar to the case just before us, the difference between a breach of a contract and damages and proximate cause. Those are solely within the purview of the trial court. And there's a lot of interesting, if there was enough evidence, hard evidence, about what are incidental, what are consequential damages, that type of thing. But the court does not have to reach any of those issues because
in your view, the trial court's ruling on causation, the standard of review with respect to causation, in your view,
and also
favors the trial court.
Also, as to the amount of damages, she went through each item of damages. So there's causation and the amount of damages. She went through each item of damages and made a specific finding as to why they shouldn't be awarded. So on both of those major points, we feel this court should affirm. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
He has a minute and 13 seconds.
A minute and 13 seconds, Mr. White.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I urge the court to read Nebraska Revised Statute 60-164. It is absolutely clear about what it takes to transfer title. Two, it is a red herring to say that the Department of Motor Vehicle gets to decide what's good title. What they do is register vehicles which permit you to operate them on the roads. They in no way stand behind, vouch for, or in any other way guarantee good title. That is something completely different, and in fact, the courts determine what is good title, not the Department of Motor Vehicles. Third, on the issue of law, the trial court said Mr. McCoolidge had to take that car with a defective title and register it and use it. That is a bad ruling as a matter of law. A purchaser has a right to elect damages, and one of the things you're entitled to do is tell the other person, you did not deliver good title, I'm going to store this vehicle, or I'll give it back to you, give me my money back, whatever, but I'm not accepting this vehicle.
Did he offer to give the vehicle back?
Yes. I mean, in negotiations, he tried everything.
Is that on our record?
I'm sure it should be. I can't tell you, ma'am, but may I finish a thought, Your Honor?
You may.
Thank you. The third thing is, you don't get to the measure of damage of the lower value of the vehicle unless you accept it. You don't have to accept it. You only look at, okay, what's the vehicle worth if it's good title versus bad title, if you accept it and sue for the difference. But you have a right to elect not to do that. And that's a matter of law as well.
So you're saying with under the UCC...
Under
I'm not calling it election of damages. I'm just saying electing a course of action.
Yes. You're not required.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and also under Nebraska precedent in the purchase and sale of vehicles, which we've quoted in our reply brief. Finally, the point I would make is that these are issues that are going to be central to the conduct of commerce in the state. These are fundamental questions of rights of purchasers and sellers. And when the seller here, all they had to do was take title in their own name if they thought it was such a good title, and then transfer it to Mr. McCoolidge as a need, and we wouldn't be here. Thank you for your
Thank you
kindness.
Very much. Our next case of the day is Shield versus Raines. Mr. Wegman, good morning.
Good morning.